Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the night's broadcast of Tapping to the Truth. Hope you are having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. This is your host, Tim Tapp, coming to you always from, as always, from historic Rome County, Tennessee. Tonight, wanted to do a little bit of talking about a certain upcoming Supreme Court case. Okay, folks, if you haven't done it already, you need to circle April 28th, 2015 on your calendars. That's the day the Supreme Court of the United States is slated to start hearing oral arguments in the Obergefell versus Hodges case. Now, why does this case matter so much to so many people living in the United States? This is the case that will, at least for the foreseeable future, settle the question of same-sex marriage at the federal level. Now, the Supreme Court has heard cases in recent years involving the question of same-sex marriage, but they have carefully and intentionally avoided handing down any rulings on the merit of the constitutionality of same-sex marriage itself, either by ruling based on other merits in the cases or by rejecting cases due to a, quote, lack of standing. This, of course, was done in hopes of avoiding direct ruling on what is a societal hot potato where there is no clear-cut constitutional answer, at least according to some. The hope, of course, was that our society would settle the question without having to have it adjudicated. But the passions on both sides of the question have forced the issue to the highest court in the land. Now, as far as the members of the court are concerned, nothing has changed as far as their desire to issue a ruling on this question. No matter how the case works out, there's absolutely no way for their individual votes not to seem political, and there will be a number of Americans unhappy with the outcome regardless of which way it goes. But there's no dancing away from it this time due to the case itself, because the two issues at the very heart of this case, issue one, does the 14th Amendment require a state to license a marriage between two people of the same sex? And issue number two, does the 14th Amendment require a state to recognize a marriage between two people of the same sex when their marriage was lawfully licensed and performed out of state? So, even if the court decides that it's strictly a state issue and not a federal issue, which the criteria for issuance of marriage license has always been a state right, they have to rule that there is no constitutional protections for those seeking to marry people of the same sex. And while that would be a devastating blow to the LGBT community, it is entirely possible that even some of the more liberal justices might vote that way. Because what most people don't even seem to realize, there is no constitutional right to marriage for anyone. The argument for the federal intervention on behalf of same-sex couples is found in the 14th Amendment, where the Equal Protection Clause is found. The pro-same-sex marriage people claim that once a state has marriage laws established, that the state must then apply those laws equally. Although, there are several people that would say that whether same-sex marriage is legal or same-sex marriage is illegal in a particular state, those states do apply the laws equally, because all people must wed under the same restrictions to be recognized by the state. Now, some people say that's just a cop-out. Some people say that's a bogus argument. But strictly legally speaking, the measure of equal treatment is everyone treated the same per the letter. This is an attempt to try and make sure that it's everyone treating the same under the spirit. But the question is, does the 14th Amendment actually help in this argument? That's where the issues come into play. That's where we have to find out. Now, before you can make that determination, it's important that you know exactly what the 14th Amendment says. And in this particular case, the only part of the 14th Amendment that matters at all is Section 1. So, before we can decide whether or not it is or should be a factor in the argument, let's take a look at it. Amendment 14, Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdictions thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction, here's the tricky part, the equal protection of the laws. Now, that's the whole point of the argument that the so-called progressives are pushing in their attack on the value of one man, one woman, marriage definition. Now, as you can see, this amendment was concerned with guaranteeing that former slaves were treated as equal members of our nation. This is focused on protecting their rights to be free, safe, and to hold property. This was obviously one of the Reconstructionist amendments. For those of you who don't know enough about history to understand what I'm talking about when I say that, these are amendments that were added to the Constitution after what we call the Civil War. Really wasn't a Civil War. You didn't have two separate groups trying to take control of the same government, which is what the definition of a civil war is. Blah, blah, blah. Not going to go into that at the moment. But the Reconstruction amendments to the Constitution were meant to try and guarantee that the nation could be put back together and that everyone, including the former slaves, would be treated as citizens. And that's what this is about. Now, in the context of the Reconstruction, it certainly wouldn't seem to apply to the particular question at hand. But the equal protection of the laws argument has been used to protect minorities from discrimination ever since Reconstruction. And many see this fight as exactly that, protecting a minority from discrimination. So, the question that the Supreme Court is going to have to decide is, does that apply? Are they going to stand up and are they going to force every state in the country to accept same-sex marriage? Or, are they going to say that there is no merit based on the argument, and therefore there is no jurisdiction for the court to rule one way or the other? Or are they going to take it a step further and say that, as it has always been, this is a state issue, take it back to the states? That's what we've got to wait and see. Now, I personally feel that ultimately this is, has been, and should forever be a state's right, and that the people of each state should decide for themselves. I think that the Supreme Court should rule that there is, in fact, no constitutional right to marry, period, for anyone, and therefore the federal government has no power to interfere with the state's rights to establish their own criteria for recognizing such a union. Now, the framers of the Constitution didn't put anything into the Constitution about marriage because at the time it was only thought of as a religious union, and that the government had no business being involved anyway. And, you know, as far as I can tell, a lot of these folks that lean heavily to the left side of the political spectrum are the ones that are constantly yammering about separation of church and state, although their understanding of that is not what's actually in the Constitution, just FYI. But, you know what, before you just flat out dismiss my thinking on this as a, oh, you're just a right-winger kind of thing, you've got to understand, and if you've listened to this broadcast before, you've listened to the shows before, you've heard me express my opinion on same-sex marriage. I understand that I am a little more libertarian on this issue than most of my conservative friends. Take a lot of heat on it, for that matter. And while I do understand those fighting for the one-man, one-woman definition, either for religious reasons or the ones that are just in it in an effort to protect our culture, and, you know, I don't just understand their arguments and the reason they're standing up, but I applaud them for taking a stand and being heard and presenting their arguments in a respect full fashion. There's that key word you're going to be hearing from me for some time to come now. You've always heard me say use your brain, now you're going to be hearing me say respectful quite a bit. Now, I tend to agree with the framers, and I see true marriage as a faith union, regardless of what the state recognizes. So the definition of marriage isn't changed no matter what a state decides. In the end, it's up to you to pursue your happiness, and no law or court case or anyone outside of you other than the people in your circle can change that. Still, there's no doubt that there will be anger and outrage as well as joy and celebration once this case is over. There will be politicians that will seek to garner your favor. There will be groups that will still try to change your mind to get them, get you to join their side. But no matter what, millions of people will be waiting and watching. And after all that, this fight will still not be over. So like I said, circle the calendars, April 28th. If you haven't heard about it yet, I promise you, you will be hearing about it, because folks are already talking about how this could be the end of the religious right, which is a lot of wishful thinking on their part. These are probably the same folks that honestly thought that conservatism was dead before Ronald Reagan came along. Said my piece, told you what I think about that. I'm going to cover a couple of things. If you missed Sunday's broadcast over at Blog Talk, I'm going to give you a couple of quick hitters from that show as well, because the Supreme Court has made news recently in a couple of other cases, most notably a couple of cases involving Obamacare. Now, as you may or may not know, last year the Seventh Circuit Court ruled against Notre Dame University and forced them to pay for contraception insurance despite the school's religious objections to contraceptives. Now, for those of you who don't know, Notre Dame University is a Roman Catholic university. Now, the Supreme Court has vacated that finding and told the lower court to rehear the case. The Supreme Court ruled last year that Hobby Lobby and other corporations could be exempted from certain parts of the Obamacare mandates based on religious objections. I'm sure most of you remember that. So because of that ruling, the Supreme Court has told the lower court to revisit their decision for the school. After all, how is it fair that the school be forced to pay if private corporations can be exempt? Now the Supreme Court revived the university's religious objections to the requirement for contraceptive coverage under the Obamacare law. throwing out the lower court's decision that was in favor of the federal government. The justices asked the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to reconsider its decision against the South Bend, Indiana-based Roman Catholic University in light of the June 2014 Supreme Court ruling that allowed certain privately owned corporations to seek exemptions from the provision. This case is part of the national litigation concerning religious objections to the contraception provisions of the 2010 Not So Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Now, the law requires employers to provide health insurance policies that cover preventative services for women, including access to contraception and sterilization. Now, as I'm sure most of you know, in the Roman Catholic tenets, those are both major, big-time no-nos. Now, this would have major ramifications across the country. It would be a major blow against Obamacare as a whole, and also would, at least hopefully, move to silence some of the deadheads, you know, folks like Miss Sandra Fluck, who, as you can famously recall, made an effort to sue Georgetown University, also a Catholic university, because for whatever reason, she just couldn't afford her own contraception. And evidently, she just couldn't contain herself either and had to be participating in sexual activity. Don't know exactly when she was finding time to study. I think we all know how that played out. It was all attention. It was all to set herself up as some new darling of the Democratic Party to try and run for office, which she did run. Didn't work out for her, but she hasn't went away just yet. This could make her go away, or make her at least have to come up with a new stick, something new to get on about. At any rate, that's noteworthy, and I keep asking the question as well, if they're going to vacate the ruling, why didn't they just go ahead and reverse it? I mean, they have that authority, and I understand, it's probably a case of standard procedure, letting the court have an opportunity to get itself right. You know, and that might be the case. I don't know. But what really concerns me more than anything else is that in this age, with so many courts across the country constantly saying that they're overwhelmed and overworked, why not just take a little bit of that load off instead of making them have to hear the case again and making the University of Notre Dame have to send their lawyers in and run up the cost for everybody as well? Wouldn't it have just been easier? Shouldn't we expect common sense to return at least to a place like the Supreme Court? Just thinking out loud. Also, as I'm sure a lot of you heard, back on March the 4th, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case of King versus Burwell. Now, that is the Obamacare challenge that involves the insurance exchanges created by Obamacare and the IRS's interpretation of the provision of the law that authorizes tax credits for health insurance purchases through an exchange, quote, established by the states. Now, there were 36 states that chose not to establish their own exchanges, so the federal government stepped in and created federally run exchanges in those states, aka the marketplace. The IRS then extended the tax credits for insurance purchase through the federally run marketplace. That's where things get tricky. That's an interpretation that certainly seems to be in direct violation of the uncommonly plain language of the law. Again, the law said specifically, quote, exchanges established by the states. In other words, nowhere in Obamacare, the Not So Affordable Health Care Act, is there any place that establishes federal authority to create a federal marketplace. Nor is there any place that allocates that funds should be made available for people purchasing through there. The language seems unusually clear. Now, the Supreme Court has to decide whether the IRS interpretation will stand or if the tax credit should have never been and therefore by default can no longer continue to have been granted in the first place. That should have never been granted to the folks in the states that don't have exchanges of their own. That is what the law seems to say. That's what the court's going to have to decide. Now, either way, we're going to have to wait until sometime around June before we'll know what the court decides. That's when they'll release the rulings. Questions arise. What happens if the Supreme Court invalidates the IRS's interpretation? Will this be the first domino to fall in a series of events that brings Obamacare to a crashing end? Or will it simply result in millions of Americans losing their tax credits, but still being expected to keep their coverage? Will this result in Americans having to pay back the tax credits already sent to the insurance companies? How should Congress and the states respond? Now, several lawmakers have already promised quick action on fixes if it becomes needed. But can we really count on swift action from Congress, especially with so many in Congress opposed to Obamacare in its total? I'd go so far as to even suggest that they shouldn't, based solely on the fact that the law should have never been implemented in the first place. But at this point, I have to say that I do have a great deal of concern for the folks who have been receiving the tax credits, especially the ones who were forced to take the tax credits, forced by the law, in order to pay for policies. And now, these same people may very well be on the hook to pay those credits back to the IRS, because they won't be able to continue to purchase their insurance. But whether they can keep their policies or not, they still would be expected to pay back the IRS. Now, if any of you have any doubt as to whether or not that might happen, just ask anybody who had a marketplace policy last year, but had their policy canceled before the year was over. Those folks got stuck paying both the penalty for not being covered and paying back the tax credits. Some folks were hurt very badly. There's two people I know personally that we had conversations with at depth. Both of these people went from expecting refunds in excess of $1,000 to actually owing more than $1,000. This happened because they were treated. Now, it was prorated on their penalty. So they got credit for being covered for the amount of time they actually had coverage. But they still had to pay a penalty based on the amount of time they did not have coverage, and they had to pay back the tax credit that they received to pay, well, to assist in paying for their coverage while they had the policies. And in both cases, this was an instance where paydays fell funny, and they were a day or 2 days late in sending in the payment. The insurance companies canceled their policies immediately and made them jump through so many hoops to try and reinstate a policy that they weren't able to do it. This is what happens when the law says you have to have something. The companies involved with providing you that service don't get in a big hurry to help you out. So it's very real. Now, another big question at that point becomes, should the states that don't have exchanges give in and build their own exchanges at that point to protect their people? Well, the fact that the administration has said very loudly that they have no plan B if the court rules against the credits, well, that tells me one of two things. Either A, they're trying to influence the court not to rule against them, or B, they're looking to put all the pressure on the states for the fix to try and force them to build their own exchange. Now, again, I don't like the unconstitutional power grab that is Obamacare. But I don't want to see any state be forced into participating in this unconstitutional act. Add the fact that even if these states started an exchange tomorrow, it wouldn't protect anybody from having to repay credits already issued either. Now, any action that Congress would take to, quote, fix things could be made retroactive. And that would protect the people. But anything less leaves a lot of Americans in a tough financial spot. Not to mention the fact that it still leaves our government in clear violation of the Constitution. All right, I'm going to take a quick break at this point, and then we're going to change gears a little bit. I want to talk about the bullet ban that went bust, which we also talked about this past Sunday. But I know a lot of the folks listening here don't catch the show over there. So let me take this break, and then we'll be right back. Stay with me. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and yes, indeed, we are looking for a miracle. We're looking for the miracle of the return of respect to America. We're looking for the miracle of us being able to put aside those things that we've allowed other people to use to divide us and to pull ourselves back together as a nation of laws and of people who understand the Constitution was built by the framers. The framers built it in a fashion that was designed to bring forth liberty and justice for everyone, and that none of that means that you're owed anything. It just means you've got the same shot as anybody else to go out and try to make it. That's what it means. That's the miracle we're looking for. And it is a miracle, if we can find it. I wanted to talk a little bit about this so-called M855 green tip ammo debacle. Now, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is evidently no longer moving forward with the proposed ban of one of the more popular, currently, types of bullets that are used in AR-15s. Facing strong opposition from gun rights advocates and a large number of members of Congress, the agency said in a statement this past Tuesday, a week ago from today, as it turns out, that it would not seek to issue final guidelines, quote, at this time. The ATF said that it would instead wait until Americans have finished commenting on the federal regulations and evaluate those comments and suggestions before, quote, proceeding with any framework. Now, of course, the statement followed 52 senators and 238 House members joining in opposition to any attempt by the Obama administration to ban the ammo. The agency also said the decision was based on the overwhelming interest in the issue and the issues raised in the comments received. In their statement, the ATF also said that it had received more than 80,000 public comments, and that in an overwhelming number of were critical of the proposal. Now, of course, in Sunday's broadcast, I went into a little more detail, but one of the things that I really, really pushed forward was the idea of not counting your chickens before they hatch, not thinking that this was over. The bottom line is, we will see if this is a victory for the Second Amendment or just a stall tactic until they come back and try it again, just a little more quietly next time. Well, they decided to come full force without being that quiet. As of yesterday being Monday, a small group of Democrats have now proposed into conference legislation that would ban this same ammo and some other ammo that they insist are armor-piercing. Now, as of right now, I tentatively have Cody Stockton, Master Gunsmith, scheduled to be on Sunday's broadcast in the second hour. We're still trying to get finalized go with that, but whether he can this upcoming Sunday or if he ends up coming on later, we're going to talk about the fact that these particular ammunition rounds, they're not particularly good at armor-piercing. In fact, being armor-piercing is something that they're not really. The fact that they can go through body armor, they can only go through the lowest level, weakest, most puny types of body armor. And even then, there's some questions. We've discussed this at some length, and he's going to bring all the facts, information, spreadsheet, the whole nine yards. We're going to talk about it. We're going to be involved in a conversation, so I hope that you'll join us with that. Also, as of right now, I have locked a guest for Sunday in the first hour, a gentleman by the name of Senator Silk. He's a state senator from Oklahoma. He is a Republican, and he has introduced a bill to protect small businesses from legal consequences of acting on religious objections. As a result of him being lead sponsor of the bill, there's been a strong pushback in the state of Oklahoma from the gay lesbian community. Some of them took it pretty extreme, and they have issued death threats against him and his children, for crying out loud. So he's going to be coming on, and he's going to talk to us about the proposed legislation in question. We'll spend some time discussing that, get the ins and outs, the facts about the bill, and then we will talk about that reaction and find out exactly to what extent this pushback has been and where the feelings are. Because, you know, to me, you know, we talked about this a little bit in Conspiracy Corner last Sunday, and that's the fact that we've gotten to the point now where it seems to be okay to go after the kids too. No. We've got to return back to respect for one another, but we at the very least need to have some level of common decency so that we don't go after the kids. So be sure to tune in Sunday in the first hour to hear us talk to Senator Silk. And hopefully, like I said, right now, tentatively, we're on in the second hour with Cody Stockton, and we'll have that discussion then. But like I said, if something happens and he's unavailable, we will have him in an upcoming Sunday, coming very soon. I didn't really want to rehash everything from last Sunday. There are some issues, though, however, that I felt compelled to go ahead and talk about. Wanted to touch on that. And I wanted to touch on... On the Sunday show, I do a segment called Outrage of the Week, and unfortunately, several weeks, I have at least two. It gets to be that bad sometimes. I also do a segment called Headlines You May Have Missed. I'm not going to go into that. If you want to check that out, I implore you, look me up on Stitcher.com or TuneIn.com, and look for the broadcast titled Supreme Court of the United States and Obamacare, Bullet Ban Goes Bust and Flags Are Still Flying. You can listen into that. You'll hear a lot of what we've just discussed on these other cases. And you'll also hear about this. But for those of you who won't, I feel implored to get to this. Was the first Outrage of the Week this past Sunday, and I still I'm still bothered by this tremendously, and I want to discuss that. If anybody wants to hop into the chat room and discuss this with me once we get started as well, you're welcome to. If you'd like to send a message via the website, you're also welcome to. This bothers me on so many levels. An 8-year-old child bride died in Yemen last week on her wedding night after suffering internal injuries due to sexual trauma. Human rights organizations are calling for the arrest of her husband, who was 5 times her age. The man was in his 40s, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the reports say that the death occurred in the tribal area of Harith. At least I hope that's close enough to pronunciation. No disrespect meant. My East Tennessee tongue has a hard time with some Arabic sounds, so forgive me. But it's a tribal area in northwestern Yemen. It happens to border Saudi Arabia. Now, this brings even more attention to the already existing issue of forced child marriages in the Middle East. If you'll remember, we have talked about a couple of deaths of child brides due to sexual trauma on this show before. It happens a lot more than most Western citizens could imagine. According to the United Nations Population Fund, between 2011 and 2020, they're looking forward just a little bit. I'm not sure how they're managing their projections, but according to the report, more than 140 million girls will become child brides. And of that 140 million girls who will marry before the age of 18, at least 50 million will be under the age of 50. It's reported that over a quarter of Yemen's young girls are married before the age of 15, and not only do they lose access to health care and education, but these child brides are commonly subjected to physical, emotional, and sexual violence in their forced marriages. One of the main issues is that there is currently no consistent established definition of a child. We don't have a definition of child, a legal age, if you will, agreed upon worldwide. This leaves various interpretations within countries and little protection for those who are affected. Establishing an age limit is among the top priorities of groups like the HRC, which was responsible for publishing a 54-page report, How Come You Allow Little Girls to Get Married? Yep, that was the name of the report. Sounds like a crazy question to me, but at any rate, this 54-page report documented the lifelong damage to girls who were forced to marry at young ages. Most pro-age limit organizations agree that 18 should be the legal age for marriage. In February of 2009, a law was created in Yemen that set the minimum age for marriage at 17. Unfortunately, it was repealed after more conservative lawmakers called it un-Islamic. Now, that, of course, begs the question, what makes that un-Islamic? Okay, so hold on to your hats, folks, because, you know, here's the part where I get a whole new round of death threats. It's because Muhammad, you know, the prophet of Islam, Muhammad was a pedophile. After his first wife died, he married a very young girl. He did wait at least a year before consummating the marriage, but she was still under the age of 10. What a guy. Bottom line is, as far as the people living under stricter interpretations of Sharia, Muhammad did it, so that makes it okay for anyone else living under Sharia law to do the same thing. I personally don't believe that an international minimum age for marriage would stop the sick individuals who insist on practicing this barbaric behavior in the name of the religion of peace. This is another strong argument as to why Sharia courts must never be allowed in the United States, and any that are already operating must be ended immediately. And, just on a side note on the topic of Sharia courts in America, a lot of the folks that listen to the show regularly probably already know about the so-called Sharia court that's been established in Irvine, Texas. Well, in a make no mistake about it statement, the mayor of Irvine, Beth Van Dwyne, said, quote, "Sharia law court was not approved or enacted by the city of Irvine. Recently, there have been rumors suggesting that the city of Irvine has somehow condoned, approved, or enacted the implementation of a Sharia law court in our city. Let me be clear. Neither the city of Irvine, our elected officials, or city staff have anything to do with the decision of the mosque that has been identified as starting the Sharia court." She also voiced her strong support for further legislation that would outlaw foreign law in Texas. So, way to go, Mayor. Good job. Somebody needs to stand up for these people. And this is mind-boggling to me. You know, the fact that this behavior goes on and there are still people in this country that refuse to see the inherent dangers of those who would insist on Sharia. I also wanted real quick to talk about the second outrage of the week from last week, just in case you missed it. You can stop me if you heard it. But again, like I said, I know a lot of the folks that catch the show here don't catch it there. And this one's pretty sickening too. I'm beyond outraged with this as well. You see, there's a group of Democrats that are attempting to block a bill that was designed to help victims of human trafficking. Want to take a guess why? Well, you see, these Democrats are trying to block this bill because it doesn't include funding for abortions. Yes, that's right. There is absolutely no doubt that abortion is one of the holy sacraments in the Church of Liberalism. It must be paid for by taxpayer dollars and must be done if you want them or not. Funny thing here is that the Democratic senators on the Judiciary Committee supported the bill. But, you know, big surprise though, it's been hinted at that perhaps, just perhaps, maybe they didn't read the bill. They didn't seem to realize that it barred federally funded abortions. And I'm sorry, does anybody else hear Nancy Pelosi in the background right now? "You have to pass the bill so that you can find out what's in it." At any rate, the legislation in question breezed through the Senate Judiciary Committee. But now that it's slated for consideration on the floor, pro-abortion activists are up in arms about how funds for human trafficking victims won't pay for killing babies. The objection is offensive to the victims of human trafficking and the millions of girls and young women around the world who are victimized by it, putting abortions ahead of meeting their needs. The objection should be offensive to every thinking, feeling human, though, not just the victims. I mean, the fact that our government would spend money on something that should be handled by private organizations, private charities, is another argument altogether, and one that I would be happy to make, by the way. But if they're going to spend the money in this fashion, if they're going to pass this bill, if they're going to do it, and then you're going to decide to stand up and try and stop them, Not for financial reasons, not for fiscally sound purposes, not for constitutional reasons, but because it won't pay to kill unborn babies. How do these people sleep at night? How? Now, just FYI, Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn is the lead sponsor of the bill to help the human trafficking victims. And evidently, the aides to the pro-abortion Democrats apparently missed that fact as well, and they seem to have missed that during the committee hearings, Cornyn crafted the bill in a way to help women as opposed to making Americans pay for abortions. Now, I would say that at least that much is a plus. That's a positive. I'll give it to them. But again, I stand ready to take the pulpit to say that this is the work that charity should be doing. Now, it's a worthwhile cause. These girls deserve some help. And I would be more than happy to make a donation, make a contribution, to offer up some of my time, if need be, in the cause to help these girls get the type of help they need that would be useful to them. But it should not be the role of our government. There's no constitutional authority for our government to be doing this. So I'm a little bothered by the fact that we have a Republican spending money in a fashion that's not constitutionally valid, even though it's, again, I don't speak out against the cause. I speak out on behalf of the principle that our Constitution says that our government should only spend money in certain fashion, and this doesn't cover it. This should be the work of a private institution, a private charity, a private group of citizens working outside of the framework of the government. It gets messy when the government does too much stuff and people start taking it for granted and start expecting it way too soon, way too easy, way too fast. Shouldn't be done. But, as I already said, if we're to the point that they're going to do it, how dare you stand in opposition just because you want some money to go kill unborn babies? Whether you believe that abortion is simply a choice, heaven help you, or whether you believe there should be exemptions to abortion limitations, like abortion should be illegal but only in the case of health of the mother, rape, incest, or whether you believe, as some very religious folks do, that all life is precious in the eyes of the Lord, whatever your faith, whatever your thinking, whatever your philosophy, wherever you stand on that issue, there should never be a single penny of American taxpayer dollars spent on providing those abortions. Because as long as one American citizen has a legitimate religious objection, then no taxpayer should be forced to pay. And again, no taxpayer should be forced to pay to help these victims. Any taxpayer who chooses to certainly should be free and able and allowed to do it. I don't have a problem with these leftist morons who want to go out and beat the drum and perform abortions in the middle of the street as long as it remains legal and they're taking reasonable care of the people that do it. Okay, I do have a problem with it. I can't lie about that, but regardless, as long as it's legal and they do it legal and they're paying for it and taxpayer dollars aren't involved, I'm not going to go down and actively try to forcibly stop them. I'll call them out. I will talk about how morally reprehensible their actions are. But ultimately, I understand that my moral value set is not the same as everyone else's. And under the Constitution, I don't have the right to impose my moral guidelines on anyone else. But they don't have the right to impose their moral or lack of moral guidelines and philosophies and values on me either. And that's exactly what the state does when the government says, we're going to take some of your taxpayer money and we're going to pay for something that you find morally reprehensible. That's what this is. The bullet ban was blocked. A group of so-called progressives immediately move to try and bring legislation to the floor to do what the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives decided they could not do via fiat. A group of Republicans who are, of course, still heavily engaged in the war on women, naturally, decide they want to try and help some young girls who are victims of one of the most heinous actions and activities that are going on our planet today, human trafficking. And a small group of so-called progressives want to stand in the way of offering that aid based solely on the lack of dollars for funding abortion. Something taxpayer dollars should be doing. That is unbelievable. Or actually, unfortunately, it's all too predictable. Alright, I'm going to take one more quick break and then we're going to wrap it up, so stay with me. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, I am back. Thanks for staying with me through the break. I'm ready to just bring the show home at this point. We're going to go ahead and bring the show to a close. Thank you very much for listening tonight. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope everybody had a fantastic St. Patrick's Day. The day is almost over. Got a little bit of Irish blood in me myself. So, of course, I've had plenty of time with the Bloody Stone and all that wonderful Irish caricaturism. Look, it's not cool to make fun of the culture, but actually, like I said, I have a little Irish blood in me, so I get some leeway there. At any rate, I hope everybody has a fantastic rest of the week, and remember, check out the show on Sunday. We've got two great guests upcoming, and we'll be back again here before the end of the week, so please feel free to check us out. If you are looking for the show in podcast form, you can either find it right here at Spreaker.com, or of course, you can find it at Stitcher.com. You can find us at TuneIn.com. You also can find us on iTunes. There's a few other places that obviously you can pick us up at. You can, if you're ready to send me a message, get direct communication, stop by tapintothetruth.com. That's T-A-P-P, intothetruth.com. You can send me a message. There's a place near the bottom of the homepage. Also, mobile version is available on the website, so if you're on your mobile device, mobile-friendly version is there. Feel free to get in touch with me. Send me messages. Let me know what you think. Give me feedback. Good, respectful comments will be mentioned on air later. And other than that, I hope everybody has a great rest of the week, and we'll see you back again real soon. Thanks for tuning in, and good night.
Say all I need to say with the time left counting down by